You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
Welcome to a brand new Cooligans podcast, and it's not a rerun.
Yeah.
Because we are again joined by the one and only David Goss. David, how you doing, man?
I got to look up my script from last week and make sure that I follow all the same points. Clearly, we're doing the same show over again. I think I started that one by making a joke at Alexis being like, I am the co-host now. I guess I was right.
Yeah, that's it. Usually, whenever I ask people to co-host with me, I'll try to mix it up to not like kind of bother people and keep asking them to come schlep them, you know, all the way down here.
Big schlep for
and
me.
I did ask originally Stefano Fasaro. He was supposed to come through. Couldn't make it. You know, so
you play Tommy Trumpets, you bring me out of the bullpen once again, and I'm ready.
Okay.
Although Edwin Diaz on the injury reserve list because he sucks, so that's what you're getting right now.
Okay, you know what? I mean, look, let the audience decide for themselves. Yeah, okay. Fair. Let's wait till the at least the eighth or ninth
reviews,
inning,
yeah,
before we make that kind of judgment. But as always,
it's the Cooligans, buddy.
Excited about today. Show. We're obviously getting the Champions League final, which Alexis was at, la di da. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Champions Cup, a lot of MLS stuff. U.S. Women's National Team are back in action. The Emma Hayes era has begun. And happy Pride, everybody. Let's go, okay?
It worked for both.
We're decked out in the finest of Pride merch. We're out here, okay? So, Champions League, Dortmund against Real Madrid. Real Madrid win, as we all sort of predicted.
Yeah.
But it felt like in the first half, like, okay, you know, Dortmund is doing what Dortmund does, especially in this Champions League. Oh, they're going to figure something out. They're going to create a chance or two. They were looking pretty composed. Boys, Real Madrid did not look like Real Madrid, but this is the whole narrative.
Yeah, this was what we said.
The entire narrative, especially online, as everybody's talking about it, every time Dortmund missed an opportunity, everybody was like, this is, if you do this, what's going to happen in that second half. And it's exactly what happened in the second half. You can't hold on long enough without finishing chances and keep Real Madrid at bay. And think that they're not going to, you know, dominate towards the end.
You get two or three chances, which is a miracle by itself. You hit the post. You're not able to finish a breakaway. I think it was the first breakaway
with
the long touch.
Yeah.
I think me and my friend turned to each other and said, Real's going to score off a corner kick and win. And, like, that's pretty much what happened.
But do you remember a couple years ago, Chelsea against Real Madrid? Christian Pulisic kind of it wasn't a breakaway, but in a 1v1 with the keeper with Courtois, and he handled it a little bit better than Adeyemi did. Okay. Much more composed touches and then put it in
the
back of
the football culture. Okay. We have La Qualita here in the United States.
Okay. That's all I'm saying is that, I don't know, out there in Germany, they don't really understand, you know, soccer.
No, they don't know Hershey, Pennsylvania.
So I don't know what, I mean, everybody was just like, even Adeyemi at that moment was just like, what the hell did I do? And hits. I mean, it is Courtois. It is the Champions League
for
final.
Sure.
A lot of pressure.
Yeah.
But in that moment, I'm just like, just take a shot.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is you take the touch to the right because it's a stronger foot, and it seems like if he goes to the right,
Adeyemi's a lefty.
Okay, so then there you go.
He did go to the left, but he took too much.
But I think he was worried about the pressure behind him, and that's why he didn't go to his right, because that's where the defense. But in that situation, then it's either going to be a PK. Or you score. And that's the part where it's like he took it himself out of the moment and panicked, and you don't get those opportunities. And you know that Real Madrid gets that chance. They're not going to panic. Now, obviously different, Carvajal off a corner kick. But like that was the most Real Madrid thing ever, which is like the smallest guy is going to score off a corner kick. They're in the same play three or four straight times. Yeah. They almost scored again. Nacho almost scored off it.
That corner, I think, shouldn't have happened, right? There was like a bad giveaway. They could, they couldn't clear it.
Yeah.
Because that was the second corner in that like sequence.
Yes.
And then
the Nacho one was like 3 minutes later.
Yeah.
Where he puts it right over the crossbar.
Yeah. It is a just kind of self-inflicted wounds for Dortmund. But I'm watching it. You're hoping Dortmund win out of like the, look, just a different winner
for the soccer guys. Yeah. Come on.
And then it was like, I wasn't even excited watching this Champions League final. I don't know. I mean, not with all due respect to Los Merengues, right? there was just something of like, come on.
Yeah.
Like because we know what the story is going to be if Dortmund can't add a couple, you can't mix it up a little bit. And we knew what was going to happen, and it's exactly what happened. So, disappointing.
If you were a fan, and I think Everton's not like the worst comparison here of like, you don't go to a lot of finals, you don't win a lot of trophies.
Right.
You get to the final, you get the run, you get the experience, and you perform the way they did, which on one hand, I think fans are probably walking away being like, how did we not win? We actually could have. And on the other hand, I was more entertained by the game than I expected to be because Dortmund were really good. How would you have reacted to that?
So I've been to Dortmund and I've spoken to Dortmund fans, and there is a lot of pride within the club and in the community. And there's just like, to me, there's a Bundesliga clubs have a little bit of like, there's a little bit of a softness to how they approach, because I think of the 50+1 rule, there's a lot of protectiveness with the club, the players. They don't like, the supporters don't boo their own players for any reason.
Right.
And I think that's kind of the mentality of like, still an immense amount of pride for what they accomplished. But I was on The Sweat on DraftKings Network, right? Nice. I had a great time with those guys. And I was talking, and because, they're not soccer guys. So I was sort of explaining the storylines around this game. And I'm just talking about, and they were asking about like Dortmund, how it's like David versus Goliath and stuff. And I'm telling them like Dortmund is, and I think this Champions League final loss kind of reinforces this. Like, it's sort of known as this perennial stepping stone club. Like, you go there, like, the business of Borussia Dortmund is spectacular.
Right.
They bring in money goes, and they bring in money.
Again, they got money because they lost for Jude Bellingham playing for Madrid.
As a business, they're doing great. But then as like, from a footballing side, there has to be a little bit of like concern of how committed are they to and to not even just to winning titles, but why can't they compete with Bayern at all?
Yeah.
I mean, they
sell to Bayern.
All right.
Yeah, that's like their reality.
You know, and then there's the drama of the weapons manufacturer sponsor that they haven't heard about.
This
happened. This news came out like a day before the final, and that one of their sponsors is a weapons manufacturer, and people are just and I've been to Dortmund. They're not happy about this.
For
at all.
Starters, by the way, this is a thing I learned last year during the NBA finals. Everyone's a weapons manufacturer. You don't know that?
Yeah.
Like, I think Subaru makes missiles. I found this out on the because this came up because Ball Arena, they're the ones who make the jars.
Yeah.
And I was saying he was watching with his wife, and she made a joke like, oh, they probably make missiles too. And then he looked it up. It's like, they do?
Dude.
So that is one thing to know.
So it's, German supporters are very, like, socially conscious. Yeah. They're very invested in their club. This is why they don't want a lot of money.
Right. I think most Dortmund fans, if you said, okay, to take the leap, we can have this Chinese business person, American corporation, this Middle Eastern company, take over, invest money, you won't lose players. We'll bring Jadon Sancho back. We'll bring the next one.
Mm-hmm.
I think most Dortmund fans would turn it down.
Exactly.
Which is the feeling. Now, but I think in this game, because I get this a lot with the U.S. men's team, where it's like the U.S. men's team goes out and plays in games that they're not favorites in.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they outperform the way I think they're going to play, but then don't get the result. And then other times, I think they don't play a style that I enjoy,
mm-hmm.
but then they get the result. And you're kind of like, some fans don't care, and some fans care a lot.
Right.
And I think for Dortmund fans, you're kind of stuck in this moment where you're like, you look back on it and you say, God damn it.
Yeah.
Like, we gave up a corner kick goal.
We
should have been up one or two at that point. And the other side is like, wow, we went into the Champions League final against Real Madrid. We played our style.
And this is, but this is the issue with like a manager like Jose Mourinho, because people, he goes to a club, and then some people are like, yeah, we're going to win. And then some people are like, we're going to watch the most unattractive football that I've ever seen in my life. And now I have to deal with all these trophies. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Not only now fans, because he has said he is going to revolutionize Turkish football, was the quote I saw he said this week. All right, man. Now the whole country is on your back.
I know. Somebody in his Mourinho is going to be the coach of Fenerbahce. And they asked him, we've heard Lukaku or Dybala are going to, you know, they might be interested in coming to the club. And he's like, just for the record, there are no Roma players that I want at this club. It's like, damn, bro. Okay, you don't need to talk about your exes viciously.
And then he's going to come in 2 weeks and be like, well, players love me. They love playing for me.
Yeah, so okay, funny. Man. So yeah, this is not a surprise again for Real Madrid. Everyone kind of expected this. It would have been much more of a shock, but what I do love is this was they won in 2022?
Yeah,
2 years ago, right?
2 years ago, yeah, 2 years.
Yeah,
ago.
Yeah. So the Ancelotti with the cigar and his Brazilian mandem out there, he recreated the photo. Was great. Another cigar. Ancelotti, even when the goal went in from Carvajal, he wasn't even...
No reaction.
He's done. He's done being happy about this. Yeah. He's just like, okay, this is what I do.
Yeah. Now he's just waiting for the memes.
Yeah.
He's like, can we get the game over with so I can get the cigar out so we could do the meme after this?
Just a man that is so... you can tell he brings a certain level of confidence to his players, because he's and it's not to say that, you know, the managers like Klopp that run around the pitch and celebrate, that's necessarily bad, but there's something to the consistent success that Real Madrid have, especially in Champions League. Is it's not a coincidence that this is the type of person he is. He just brings this level, the standard to everybody's game. And now, I saw, obviously, Mbappe is going to be joining very soon, which is like, that's the...
It's going to be the most important part of their week, and they won the Champions League.
Which is just the thing they needed to get over the edge, what I mean? So good for them.
Because next year, there'll be potential to win a double with Mbappe in the side.
Okay, because they weren't sure if they could win the Club World Cup without Mbappe.
Well, listen, you don't know. Seattle Sounders might be in it. Columbus.
They have... That matchup with the Sounders schedule. Yeah. They have a little X on the
calendar. For that and the Urawa Reds.
But so that news is huge, because now the questions are, all right, I think we talked about this last week.
Like who comes out of the team?
Who comes out of the team?
Yeah.
But now those conversations are getting more serious, because I think they asked Ancelotti that question before there was even an official announcement of Mbappe. Yeah, he's like, I'm not done with my cigar. But that's the question again. Where is he going to play? The main question, and that people have been talking about, who gets the position, Vinny or Mbappe?
I don't think it's between. They're both going to start. I think if they're healthy, they're both starting. It's not between the two. I think you have the setup that they had on Saturday. You just add him instead of Rodrigo.
Okay.
And maybe you're changing the way Vinny plays, but Vinny likes to go out wide and create even when he's one of the front two. Or the other is you go to a 4-3-3. And the idea, I think, in this midfield right now, when Toni Kroos leaves, because he's retiring, you will lose his passing, but you will now gain ground coverage. Right. Where like Valverde could probably run for 300 days in a row and still cover the most ground. You're going to continue with Tchouameni. You still have Camavinga. You have all of these options of guys who can do all of that work. And so then you could go into a 4-3-3 potentially and play Mbappe down the middle or play Vinny down the middle like you do now, and then still have those three attackers as a part of it.
My thought, I think Vinicius Jr. is a better attacking winger, like a more creative winger than Mbappe.
Yes.
I would put Mbappe in the middle, even though he's very publicly said he does not like playing as the nine.
Which is why if you play them as a two, you, as Ancelotti, are kind of saying like, hey, you could go find the parts of the game you like sometimes.
Yeah.
And when Vinny does that, then you come inside, which even if you played in a 4-3-3, that would be happening anyway, because anytime one of them gets on the ball, other guy becomes the next forward and wants to finish.
I say put them literally both there. Put your lineup is just a merged left wing.
Yeah.
Just right, both of them there. People are going to be confused at this new formation.
What I'm saying is, I think that Real Madrid's in trouble. Where are you going to play, guy? Like, these questions, this could tank this club. They have to figure out how to get Mbappe into a Champions League winning side. This could be the end of Real Madrid all time. Barcelona are like, ha, what we do is we don't have good enough players, and then we don't have to decide who needs to start.
That was, you know what? I got to applaud David Goss, because I'm a stand-up comic, and that was such a believable, I listened to you as a journalist before, like, that you were making a joke, and I'm like, this man got me. I was literally like, wow.
The snakes are in the reeds. The trouble's brewing.
I'm like, okay, he's settling in quite nicely, so that's good to see.
I will say this. If you were to ask what's going to throw this team off over the next 10 years, I think the two questions are, do they get bored? Like, at some point, what we always see with great teams is, like, Vinny at some point will be like, I want it to be my, like Neymar did.
Yeah.
I want it to be my team. What's the next project? The other is, if it's not Ancelotti, which is like, at some point, maybe he decides I want to retire or I want to coach a national team, whatever. I don't really know who else fits in, because like what you said, of all the other guys that are in his echelon are so different from him. Pep is so different. Not that he would ever go there. Klopp is so different. And I think what makes Ancelotti great here is just the way he keeps things level and relaxed and all that. He's not a tactical genius in the same way that maybe some of these other guys are, but he doesn't need to be with this team. I don't know who else fits that bill. And, like, who has the gravitas to walk in and be like, yeah, I'm just smoking a cigar and everyone. Like, the admiration Vinny has for him, these are two human beings whose lives are so different. Vinny is like a child from Brazil who's playing, and Ancelotti's 1,000 years old from Italy. And yet there clearly works.
You're right.
And I don't know who else fits that bill. And so at some point, if he decides that he's done, I wonder that next generation or that next coach, if you're able
We're sort of in this gray area of like, We had the legendary managers. We knew who sort of the next in line were going to be. And do we have, I guess, given the constraints of, especially, so the Premier League is obviously the most, you know, it's the best league right now, because obviously the most money, the quality of players.
Zero teams in a European final, so continue to speak on.
No, but it's something too.
The Ottoman Empire is coming, but okay.
The leash is so short that... Do managers even get time to like figure stuff out a little bit, to build even the resume? So you would expect that the next crop of elite managers are going to come from the Premier League, but that doesn't really feel like the case, because
it's for the most part, it's Germany, because of what you talked about with the acceptance. And so Xabi Alonso would be the obvious name whenever this happens, wherever he is, and obviously his background, but there's not a ton of guys like that. There's not a ton of opportunity to build yourself up. And then it becomes like, okay, Ancelotti leaves and Real Madrid looks at it and they go, well, we know Pochettino's a good enough manager, but the guy's probably at that point been in 4 jobs in 6 years.
Exactly.
It's damaged goods. Is that the view we want to have of our team? All of that stuff.
And I think too many, it's like when you look at somebody's dating record, like too many bodies.
Yeah.
You got too many bodies. How am I going to know?
Yeah. How do I know I'm the one? Yeah.
why am I going to settle down with you?
Yeah,
you
know? For sure. Yeah. It's, I mean, Mancini, all of these guys, I don't think they're at that level. So that would be the only like flag I would have of I don't know if they're going to win 25 Champions Leagues in the next, you know, in 15 years, if that's where they're at.
Yeah. of Champions League.
Woe is me.
Do you guys think Zidane would come back? Because he's, I think, the closest to that Carlo Ancelotti mold of like, so I'm not going to overcomplicate things. I'm just gonna let
if anybody's read Johan Cruyff's autobiography, it is Johan Cruyff. As all these pronounced, I learned quickly. But if you read the autobiography, you hear just about the obviously the some of the tactical stuff and everything. But really, when he was managing Barcelona, he just talked about how like ridiculous of a job it is to work with the board, to work with the president, and dealing with all these egos and people backstabbing you. It's a very killer corporate environment. That this is why I think Zidane was like, look, I had the success, I can't deal with this nonsense anymore. And that's where we are, I think, in with a lot of these really top tier jobs. The pressure is incredibly high, and you're getting a lot of criticism. You got people that want to build their own career. It's politics.
Yeah.
So it's
you're a CEO more than you're a coach. That's the thing with the Chelsea job and the conversations. They, you know, I read a piece about the list of candidates and the things they were looking for and what failed. Mm-hmm. And for some, it was like play style. Oh, we want to pass. Play style is like the bottom of the conversation, which is like, can you deal with these international organizations all yelling at you how they want to do things? And can you manage a budget of multi-hundreds of millions of dollars? Right. And then maybe at some point you'll mention, oh, where does the left back go when the right back is building out? Dude. That is like that's the end of that job. So you're right. I do wonder, because Zidane is obviously your great mention, which is he set a lot of this in place. If the only answer is just former Real Madrid superstar player.
Yeah.
Like if the answer is just it's Iker Casillas whenever he decides to manage.
Weirdly enough,
Sergio Ramos.
As long as Florentino Perez is the president of that club, they're going to be fine. Yeah. He is ruthless. My man wants to win. My man knows that the success of his club means the success, just that his life is thriving and his ego is satisfied. And you see, even though when he walked out to go to the trophy or whatever, there was the man looked 15 years younger.
Swag.
There was just the swag. He's like, yeah, I'm supposed to be here. All right.
I hope PSG's front office was at the game and he walked in the room and was like, smells like broken. I just got Mbappe for free when you wouldn't sell him to me. Let me go watch my team win another Champions League final.
My man is, even though, you know, did you watch the Beckham documentary?
No, not yet.
So in the Beckham documentary, they have an episode focused on his time at Real Madrid, and they it was just like there was a segment of like they went through like four managers in like 8 weeks. You know what I mean? Because they couldn't find one that just did what Florentino Perez expected. Right. And that's how it's for you to be in a situation where you have a manager you're paying. They had like Fabio Capello. I think they ended up with Fabio Capello or something like that. But when you're like, nah, you ain't the guy. I offered you a 3-year contract. You're not the guy after 3 weeks. You know what I mean? That is the kind of ruthless.
Well, Lopetegui, they fired before he even started or whatever it was. After they got him fired from Spain because they hired him. They're like, don't care.
They're ruthless. So, as long as he's running that club, I think they're going to be
Fine. They got a stadium that could support Taylor Swift now, so the finances are fine.
So that we all know that's the standard. Swifty.
Yeah.
So moving on from the UEFA Champions League to the CONCACAF Champions Cup, we had the final over the weekend as well. It was Pachuca versus Columbus Crew. Dominant victory for Pachuca. But we may need to focus more a little bit on what happened in the bathroom versus on the pitch.
This is why you tune into the Crew.
Yeah, this is
why
we're here.
Okay, because, I mean,
let me put on my expert cap right now. Oh, you're talking bathroom situations? New York Jew ready to chime in.
Digestive issues? Yeah. Let me speak on this.
Who had bagels for breakfast?
Okay. So, yeah, if you haven't heard, obviously Columbus lost 3-0, which is a pretty shocking result because given how well Columbus have played in this tournament and in Mexico, you would think that this wouldn't be the result. But Wilfred Nancy, after the game in the post-match press conference, mentioned, I'll read the quotes, Charles Baum of MLSsoccer.com. He said, Wilfred Nancy, speaking to the media, said his whole team and staff were ill, stricken with diarrhea the past 2 days. Emphasizes that he's not attributing the defeat to this, that Pachuca were deserving winners.
Read the actual quote.
It says, quote, my players gave everything, knowing that they were sick also. All the team had diarrhea since yesterday. The staff also. Don't get me wrong. This is a fact. I'm not here to tell you Pachuca don't deserve to win. They scored 3 goals. Okay.
Okay.
But my players gave everything. He's trying to get out of it.
Yeah.
Because everybody's going to be like, oh, my God. Here goes again. The old diarrhea trick.
Classic.
Classic. Okay. Well, next thing you can tell me, your dog ate your homework, I bet, right? No, this is a thing where you've heard of these stories, right? Like, you know, we know the traditional, blowing up a bunch of fireworks outside the team hotel, keep them awake. And
fire
blah, blah, blah.
Alarms going off.
So I don't know. How does the entire team get diarrhea 2 days before a game? You can't bring something up like this and not think there's something sinister afoot.
Oh, interesting. I didn't go there. It wasn't on my bingo board, but it's not that far off.
Okay.
Of like team travels for CONCACAF, everyone gets sick. I hadn't gone Sinister yet.
Yeah.
I hadn't gotten there. That's next level
for
me. It's a
thing, you know, I don't know where they got the food from. Yeah. I don't know if they, so I've heard of teams also bringing.
Pachuca brought a cake in the shape of a horse. And they said, there's nothing inside. Let it into your hotel.
That's
welcome to our city.
Feel free to eat the horse if you like.
Exactly. Yeah. Horse is fresh.
It's a good horse.
Yeah. Top of the line.
So that was my first thought. I don't know. Look.
My first thought was, I've been to Mexico a couple times. I love it. It's one of my favorite places in the world. I limp back, though, every time. I know it's going to happen to me. Now, I don't go into a hyperbaric chamber before I get there to make my body into perfection, which unfortunately does not include the digestive system for Columbus, which, have you heard of Imodium, guys? There's science you can use.
Because they were preparing.
They were locked in.
For this game, and we all,
you know what, those bags run straight through.
One of those colostomy bags, yeah, exactly. Damn, bro. No, man. So they were wearing the oxygen mask and they're working out, and they look like Bane, and it's super intimidating. You watch these videos, and you're like, yo, they are here.
They've thought of everything.
the sports science nowadays is crazy, and then for a 3-0 result.
It becomes a bridesmaid scene all of a sudden.
Due to the runs, you hate to see it. I appreciate Wilfred Nancy's just candidness.
Just being like, boom.
But it's just like, bro, they got the shits. Yeah, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. He's like, this was my tactical plan. The whole team's had diarrhea for 2 days, and then this didn't work. And you're like, sorry, can we?
Those weren't grass stains on their shorts, sir.
Paul Pierce style on this one.
Carry them into the locker room. So I feel for them, man. It sucks. I leave for TST tomorrow. I'm making sure I'm very careful.
Saltine for the next 24 hours.
My next meals are gonna be. I don't know what some of these other TST teams are capable of. Okay. it's a bummer. The bigger issue I had. And I had forgotten about it at the time, but the Champions Cup final was going on at the same exact time as all the MLS matches, which was also really weird. And I'm like, why the hell is this going on? And somebody on Twitter reminded me that they rescheduled the game because of the Mexican presidential election was yesterday, which Mexico has their first female president, so. Shouts to you, hermana. Good for you. I forgot her name. I don't pay attention to Mexican politics like that, but I really should. Somebody do the research in the background. Who is the current president of...
Claudio Sheinbaum, who is part of the trap. Shout out to Sheinbaum.
Yeah. So congrats. And but that was the reason why the game...
Also, the main reason is because no one in this region talks to each other and no one functions. Like, even UEFA is low functioning. CONCACAF is barely functioning sometimes. So it's not shock. Also, why was it a single game final at Pachuca?
Yeah, it's just
for the first time ever.
Yeah,
who had this conversation where they're like, you know what we should do? We should do two legs up until the final, and then one team should host that final, and that's it. Because I think part of the game was Columbus. It was very Dortmund-esque. If Columbus came out, played, had some chances.
Columbus had a chance in the first 10 seconds.
Yeah, and then Rondon takes over. He scores. Whatever. Because it was one game. Columbus had to open up and keep going, and that's where you get the score line, I think, the way it was, which was what they had to do versus Tigres was a completely different challenge of, like, you came into it with the lead, you could manage the game. That's one experience versus go out in a neutral site and play your best soccer on their field in front of their fans. It was probably too much to overcome without the diarrhea leaking down their leg.
You're marking Salman Rondon, you got bubble guts, your stomach is making noises. Like, bro, I hope the on-field mics don't pick it up. You know what I mean? It was wild. So, look, again, but congrats to Columbus Crew for getting this far. I hate that the narrative again becomes like MLS, we need more money and blah, blah, blah.
Which, by the way, I think Columbus has a more expensive roster than Pachuca.
Exactly. So
anyone who watched, literally, I would say, I don't know if we talked about this on the last show, These, I think, are the two best-run clubs in the region.
Right.
Pachuca
right.
is the best academy in Mexico. They then also bring in players like Rondon, and they've brought in the right pieces internationally, Colombian young players, to fill in their roster. But they are fully committed to, they have a residency, they have a high-quality academy, to develop those players, sell those players for their best future, and then rebuild their clubs. This is not Club America or Tigres, which is just money, money, money. But they're able to contend off and on their years. And then Columbus, they're playing MLS Next Pro kids in Champions League finals, having them play through pressure. Like, Nance believes in what they're doing. They've rebuilt their academy. They've rebuilt their stadium, all these things. I think these are the two best teams, but it's not just because of pure money. And, like, that cliche kind of gets tough in moments like this.
It's impressive that Pachuca was able to see Solomon Rondon not even be able to complete passes at Everton and was like, you know what? We could work with this guy.
This is what we're looking for.
My man gets a brace in the damn Champions Cup final.
Could be playing in MLS. Literally a player who could have been playing in MLS and no one in MLS signed him, and he is the leading goal scorer. Dineno was the same 2 years ago. These are players who could be in MLS, and it's fun that the two markets are competing against each other in this space. The rumor right now is that Yakumakis could be headed to Cruz Azul. Like, the two leagues now are very similar in the way they spend, the players they can bring in, and then the projects that they present to those players. But Rondon, he could have been a player in Major League Soccer. Your team in MLS could have been in a Champions League final or a Champions Cup final, because we like to change the name every 2 years. And he could have been your leading scorer.
SEO purposes, I think. Yeah, they were like, our Google searches are brutal. We're losing to UEFA Champions League.
And so now no one searches it because no one knows what it's called. And that's the advantage.
That's what we're here for, to really just do the marketing and branding.
They told Nance after, they're like, we need shock value to get this tournament more relevant. He's like, I got you. My whole team has diarrhea.
Okay. Aiden Morris just vomited on the goalkeeper. Yeah. You know what I mean? Again, congrats to Columbus for getting this far. Look, Aiden Morris and Darlington Nagbe both signed that ball. So obviously, I have a lot of care and love for the fact that they joined us on the show. But maybe next year, folks.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
So we're talking about Columbus Crew and MLS side. There were, like Christian mentioned, some MLS matches over the weekend, but I think the biggest news from the league, guys, is what happened off the pitch over the weekend. There's some rumors about transfers, some new re-signings. A manager was sacked earlier this morning. What do you guys make of what's going on in MLS?
Where should we start? Let's start with Gonzalo Pineda.
Yeah.
Soon
to be filling co-host for the Cooligans, now available. Stefano Alexis, stay home. Gonzalo Pineda, he's ready.
Gonzalo Pineda is out as Atlanta United manager, and not too shocking given how the results have been brutal, especially at home. I've been to so many Atlanta United games, and it's an incredible experience. Obviously, the train horn and the supporters and everything. And when they lost, I think five home games in a row. When you go to and in that stretch, they also beat Inter Miami with Messi.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more of a deflating feeling to go into that stadium with so many people and see how they've been this year and not be surprised that they had to get rid of their coach, because it's just, I think a lot of people liked him as a person, but the results have been the results. Do you remember the table flipping incident
with
Joseph Martinez.
So not everyone likes him as a person.
Exactly.
To be clear, I think Joseph might have other things to say.
So, but there have been issues, I haven't really heard anything super specific to negative things about him. But the results are the results. So it's not too much of a shock.
The on-field stuff. You have the results, which I think in the end, over 100 games, he lost more than he won. And they pretty much straight across the board, it was win, ties, losses, the same.
Yeah.
And The issue for me is just lack of consistency and not in the results in the play. They didn't lose the same way all the time. There were not clear big ideas that they were always building towards. Even when you go and beat Inter Miami, you change the formation, you change the setup, you get this shock result, then you come home and try it a second time, but with different pieces, moving it around. The entire time Pineda's been there, it has been highs and lows. Yeah. And like as a manager, especially in this league, with the roster they have and the talent they have, can you find a base level to allow the talent to play from there? Right? Almada and Saba and Yakubakis, they will win you games if you can keep your team, if you cannot lose for them. And that has not been the case. Now, there are other teams where that's not possible. There are other teams like Chris Armas has to go and find ways to win games for his team. So he sets his team up. He high presses. He goes for it because he has to. Charlotte's kind of been similar in the team they've played this year, right? They have struggles at the back, and they're athletic players. So they're like, all right, we'll press high, and that will make it easier for them to defend because that's what works for them. Pineda didn't really need to do a lot of that, but he never found anything that fit. He never had an overarching idea. And Garth Lagerwey gave him a chance coming in because this is Garth's project now. And the expectation, I think, for a lot of people out the gate was like, oh, he's just going to let him go. He gave him a chance, and they got into the playoffs last year, whatever. But
yeah. And he worked with him in Seattle. So
right. The highs and lows of what they've done and the way they started the year and then the deficits they fell into. And you can't say, well, Yakumakis has been hurt because you've got all – Insigne's been out. And that team has stayed around. Inter Miami has 87 players that come in and out of their team. FC Cincinnati lost all of their center forwards and have flipped their roster and lost both of their wingbacks, and they've remained at the top. And nothing about Atlanta shows you that they're resilient or that they have a clear idea of who they are. It's really just trying different ideas every single week. And so you can understand why this happens. What's fascinating is this will be the first time Garth Lagerwey ever hires a manager for a team he coaches. Jason Kreis was in place at RSL when he took over, arguably one of the most successful runs in MLS history. Then he comes to Seattle. He let Ziggy Schmidt go. Brian Spencer is the interim because he's there. He wins MLS Cup. There's not really a decision at that point.
Exactly.
Brian Spencer had great success. Then he comes to Atlanta. Pineda's already in place. So for someone who is considered by many the best executive in Major League Soccer, he has never done this before. And that's kind of fascinating because I don't know which direction he goes in.
Yeah, I mean, and also Atlanta United have had a really poor string of managers and even high-profile foreign guys. Yeah. And it's just like something is not working. And a lot of people point the finger at Carlos Bocanegra as well. So sometimes some people are like, okay, you got Pineda out. Why don't you get out of there? So I don't know. I don't know what is the common denominator of this lack of success, because ever since Tata Martino left, it's been pretty underwhelming, to say the least.
I think when you go out now, you're trying to find the next manager. One thing is for Atlanta, they can spend and operate in a space no one else can. Yeah. So it will be interesting in, like, there are names available to them because there was a few openings this offseason, but like DC and Colorado are not having the same conversations. Yeah. Even I don't think Toronto are having the same conversations that Atlanta can have. We're like, I think it's legitimate that Atlanta could go back to Henry and say, do you want to do this? And he would say yes, because there is enough of a project here.
Oh, wow.
I think those names are now in play, and I have my list of here. Insane notes where it's like, you've got the Pablo Educat and the Freddy Juarez's of the world, and I bring up Brendan Burke. Those are people who have been assistants in Major League Soccer. Freddy Juarez, short-time head coach.
A lot of lower division
experience. They know what it takes to win in this league. If I had a team, I would hire any of them to be coach. I think they will all be in this convo, but then the Henrys of the world – you can talk about some of the big managers in Liga MX. You could talk about some of the big managers down in South America. You could talk about other people over in Europe that have connections. Or this is, again, a club where do you buy Jim Curtin? Do you just do what Columbus did and give the resources to the team and the contract to him to say, come do this? And I'm not saying Curtin will do it. He's so ingrained in Philly. With Kevin Sullivan, his grandfather was Jim Curtin's college soccer coach. Jim Curtin lives Philadelphia, but this is that job. The opportunity, and I think for anyone who knows what's going on, the opportunity to do it under Garth, where he has proven that he will give you your space, that he will invest in you, that he will support you. Because whoever takes this job, the first question in the door is going to be, we're selling Thiago Amado. What are we going to do to replace him?
Yeah.
That's an opportunity. That's an opportunity to spend for one single star like maybe no other MLS team has outside of Inter Miami, and like anyone's gonna jump at a job like that.
Right, and then also the Yakumakis, who is looking like he's gonna be sold very soon to go to Cruz Azul, and that will there's just something to the players not looking very excited to play for Atlanta United. And I don't know if it's the coach, I don't know if it's the organization, but it's just wild to go from those first 3 years
where it was just game-changing.
This is literally like, wow, all of the expansion clubs in Major League Soccer are going to look like this. Like, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
And now we're just like, oh boy, it doesn't look, you know, what glitters isn't always gold.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the other in Major League Soccer transfer news, obviously, we talked about, we praising Ricky Puig last week. And he signed an extension.
He's welcome.
Yeah.
We got him that money. What's our percentage?
Okay. We're putting out all this good PR.
Yeah.
So throw
Ricky,
us.
Ricky, just call us. Come on.
Where's that kickback? So that was just good news. I think I love the reveal as well. It was just like the video of him reading a newspaper, and the cover of the newspaper says Ricky Puig.
No one does it better than the Galaxy in MLS.
And he says... And the only line was, who's bored in L.A. or whatever?
Yeah, because that was like the day he got there.
I saw it was
everyone's like, he hates it. He's so bored. It's like, he hasn't even been there. He hasn't even seen the $86 peanut butter and jelly sandwich he could get.
Also, if you're bored in L.A., you're doing so. You don't have friends, I think, right? Like, you're doing something
Although,
wrong.
Although, low-key, he was in New York.
I mean, L.A. is a lot of things. Boring is not one of them. Expensive. Yeah, I'll give it that. But then also, Galaxy news, Marco Reus. Because Marco Reus, after he announced he was leaving Borussia Dortmund, all the conversations came out, like, and he said that he was probably going to join MLS. Charlotte FC had his discovery rights, which we love those.
We love that. We love that. We love that a team has the rights to sign a player in a place that player has never heard of. Where Marco Reus was like, Charlotte, no, I don't want to go play in Turkey. And they're like, no, that's in the U.S. And he's like, what?
Okay, you got a geography lesson first, but I promise this is not, it's not as bad as you think. But no, Charlotte had the discovery rights, and but it looks like they are having conversations about selling those discovery rights to the LA Galaxy so you can join the Galaxy. My first thought, and we might be kind of on the same page, I'm a little bit iffy about this. Marco Reus has not been a player that's, one, gotten that many minutes,
mm-hmm.
that he's also deals with quite a few injuries.
Yeah.
That's been kind of his the thing that's kind of stuck with him the last couple of years. Even the Borussia Dortmund fans are just like, we wish he wasn't injured so that he could even enjoy some of the success, because he seems to be missing games.
I think he's gotten hurt before the last four major tournaments for Germany.
Yeah.
He has missed all four of those tournaments with an injury within 1 month of the tournament starting. Yes. That is who he is. That's been his nature. And you don't like charge him with that, but it's a reality. The other part is the attack's not the problem for the Galaxy. They just spent DP spots on two wingers.
Yeah.
And they have Ricky, so he's not a 10. So I don't know even where he then fits in to a team that has the worst defense for any team trying to contend for MLS Cup.
I'm like, that's Marky Delgado's spot.
Yeah.
He's playing great. Why would you take him out?
So now it's like he becomes either a center forward or Payne still becomes a center forward, whatever it is. Jovalich has played really well, so that doesn't totally make sense. Obviously, not everyone's always healthy, so it's fine to have depth. The other thing is they don't have a DP spot.
Yeah.
So unless they can buy someone out, and the rules have now shifted over the course of this season that they could buy Peck down because they don't need him to be on the spot to activate the U-22s. And now we're in the,
okay.
Nerd conversation. Let's get
a bunch of dorks.
Yeah. Saying acronyms that don't matter. He will not be taking a lot of money to do this. It would be similar to when Bale came, where Bale didn't get paid a lot. Now, we don't know. We don't know where Zlatan's, where the goats he got and the house are and all those things. But that's sort of the case. If that's the case where Reus is basically like, you don't have to pay me that much. I just want to come do this for fun. Fine. You don't turn that down.
Exactly. That seems to be.
But if the case is we're going to like flip parts of our roster and maneuver to get him in, it is one. I think if you're a Galaxy fan, actually depressing because it's very old school Galaxy of like, oh, we've heard of this guy. Yeah, yeah, just make sure that you throw everything that's been good in the garbage and build towards that. And the other is like, if they have resources, they should be using it on center backs, defensive mids, potentially fullbacks, whatever you want to say. So that's all really confusing. The only way it makes sense is if it's straight up him saying, I want to come live in LA. I want to do this for a year or half a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, fine, let's just be so good on this side of the field that
Marco,
we ignore it.
They'll do a couple car dealership commercials out in North Hollywood. And
the Kia and Hyundai.
Trying to market this club as much as possible. When I went to Dortmund to watch, they played, it was Dortmund, it was the Revier Derby, Dortmund Schalke. Marco Reus got injured like 8 minutes into that game, bro. Even I've witnessed it in person.
You're no longer invited to the Galaxy game for the rest of the year, I think.
I think
you're permanently banned.
More than that, I just hope it works out. But when I look at Major League Soccer teams, I don't say LA Galaxy need Marco Reus.
No.
Without a doubt. Yeah. So that is it's an exciting move, of course. I'm also not necessarily excited if you went to Charlotte either.
Yeah.
But it
would be more fun there because he's clearly a starter. He fits. Abada, 2 goals this weekend. He was awesome. Now you've got both those wingers, but it's on turf. And with his history, and they've been pressing really high. Like, is he going to fit into any of that at all? Now, I won't be shocked if Marco Reus is good in Major League Soccer, but it would seem odd to bring him to the one team that has players that play
the controversy
position.
About the goal that was given. Did you see this? I don't know if you saw this. This was an own goal of Williams. I forgot his name.
Derek Williams.
Derek Williams. It was a cross. The ball bounced off of him, and this was not given as a goal. Atlanta United against Charlotte. This was not given as a goal, and then maybe 3 minutes later, the referee stops the game and says, and VAR, and they go and take a look at it. I
don't know how you're supposed to tell.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. I was like, how are you supposed to tell this is a goal?
Yeah.
And more than anything, I was just like, you're going to stop the game. It wasn't even like a stoppage of play and let's go look. Stop the game.
Well, because I think they reach a point where they kind of have to if they genuinely think it is, because you don't want to get stuck in the next moment.
Exactly.
Where like RSL had that nightmare scenario where Austin handballed it in the box and then went and scored, and they had to take that goal off to get back. So you're trying to avoid that. I think it was Jeremiah Oshan who tweeted this out, who covers the Sounders and MLS as well as anyone, who was like, if you're not going to have goal post cams and you don't have goal line tech, like, what are you doing with this?
It felt wild that VAR got involved. I've seen some tweets about there was another angle that the crew had that wasn't
from
shown
the helicopter.
Which is also why? Okay, then why not show? Why would you have that angle that you wouldn't show to just confirm?
Yeah.
Because I could see it not being given, and the fact that if it was given on the field,
100%.
I'm like, all right,
100%. Because you have no idea what you're
not sure.
At.
But to be like, we are. It's clearly and obviously it did go in. I don't see that, and I wish they could have shown that angle.
I think Major League Soccer is a great place because it's absurd. I just love the idea that Patrick Ajimong coming out of East Hartford, Connecticut, and URI is better than two DP center forwards, one of which plays for Poland alongside Lewandowski.
Right.
And it's like, that is MLS in a nutshell.
Some guys just
Dean Smith, come here and coach Patrick Ajimong. That's the opportunity you have.
Some people just can't figure it out. Yeah. It's so wild how this league can befuddle some absolute superstars. The other thing we got to highlight as well is also Chicho Arango scoring, getting a hat trick, and in just a beautiful goal against Austin. Also, RSL has been on a tear. We talked about them last week and just their goalkeeping issues. And
you know how you solve that? Score five goals.
Score 5 goals. 5 goals helps quite a bit because your goalkeeper might give up 4.
Exactly. Guaranteed win.
But Chicho Arango is I saw Matt Doyle talk about how basically he's the leading MVP candidate.
Wild.
At the moment. I mean, it is... It's just, I feel bad for Stuver, former NYCFC goalkeeper who
punts it so quickly back out. He's like, get this out of here.
So upset, but
I don't. So a few things. One, it's happened to Stuver a couple times. He's made a couple saves. He's gotten beaten, I think, once. He got injured once. I think it was against FC Dallas because he ran into the net trying to save one of these.
Yeah.
Because Austin plays with a high line, so he has to play off his line. I don't think I've ever seen one of these this early in a game.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, normally it's, I've seen the goalie off his line a couple times.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll try it in the second half. This is 14 minutes into this game, and it's two steps. It's not like he's running into space and he launches it. He straight up gets all of the, he chips it from behind midfield. It is absurd.
And he's not even necessarily looking at where he's going to.
Oh, yeah. Well, you don't want to give Stu, you're giving him the eyes.
But, and it's so just remarkable because he looks like he might be, let me mute that. He looks like he might be, look, he's looking like he's trying to
switch the field.
He's trying to make to switch the field and, yeah, gets everybody.
It's insane.
I mean, it's just great. I mean, there's something to, look, you see something like this and you're like, okay, he did his homework. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, he knows.
They know, you know, well, how they...
Do you remember when Zlatan, his first game, where he scored the insane goal?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The video that came out afterwards was he goes straight into training that first day. Then they go into a video session. And in the video session, he goes, you guys look how far Tyler Miller is off his line.
Yeah.
And look how he always shifts to the side. And then he did it 3 days later. So you're right in that a lot of that preparation's coming before, and you know, against Austin.
But, and Zlatan hit it on the volley.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so you have it was still an amazing strike.
Yeah.
But to do this with this much accuracy, and this is what the ones I love is that when the midfield strikes that hit the back of the net.
Right. They don't bounce in. Yeah.
That, I mean,
those are lame. You only scored from midfield off the bounce.
Those are unimpressive. But the fact that he just hit this so on a rope perfectly, where Brad Stuber was not.
My friend texted me, is Chicho juicing? Because it's just like this, and he's in this absurd moment.
Yeah.
Right. He's been playing this way. I think he's the fastest player to 25 goal contributions combined in MLS history. So goals and assists over the course of the season, it's been, 15, 16 games, and he's already there. He's in this moment, and the fascinating thing about RSL right now is they have other guys who are playing well or they have to rotate. So he hasn't actually played as a center forward the whole time. He's playing as a 10 in this game.
Yeah.
And they have Anderson Julio in front of him, and he's like, okay, cool. You're going to play me further away, then I have to shoot from here. Because I got to score my goals. What else am I going to do?
Daddy got to eat.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, he's center forward? Cool. So I'm just going to shoot from here. He ends up with a hat trick in this game. Like, that's the end of it. He has the PK in the end. He has another goal where he makes a late run. He's seeing the game. He's dominating the game in a way that when they signed him, you knew it was a good signing because of what he did at LAFC. But we never got to see this part of his game at LAFC. Yeah. We saw him link up and connect, but Vela's on the field. So Vela's the dominant force, and Chicho wasn't. And this is, I think, beyond even what RSL imagined. And if he can sustain it for the year, he'll be MVP.
Yeah, it's very clear this is his team, right? That's not much of a – that wasn't the case with LAFC. Also think about LAFC let him go. Did they sell him?
They sold him
to a Colombian club.
They always wanted someone to be a better pressing center forward.
Yeah.
So all the years he was there and scored goals and they won titles, they kept trying to get rid of him.
Yeah.
And he wanted more money and they couldn't make him a DP, so it couldn't fit in, whatever, blah, blah, blah. No offense, LAFC. I don't know if you found anyone better. Like, this guy would be pretty. I guess Giroud will work. Giroud's going to be great, but what would have been nice for half of this season to have that?
Without a doubt.
Just like Christian mentioned, to wrap up, we've got some USWNT news. Emma Hayes' era has begun. She took over, got a 4-0 victory over South Korea. What do you guys make of the game? How's the USWNT looking so far?
Yeah, look, it's always exciting to have victories for the U.S., especially after, the World Cup and people still feeling like the sting of that. Some people were sort of poo-pooing South Korea, like, oh, I'll be impressed if she does it against a good team. South Korea not, terrible. So
no, but they start a 16-year-old from PDA, shout out PDA, in Southern New Jersey, who now is on Angel City but is 16 against Katarina Macario and Mal Swanson. It's a different level.
They still looked great, and I think Mallory Swanson scoring two goals is just
amazing.
Great news because again, her missing the last World Cup and coming back from that terrible injury. Did you ever hear her talk about it?
No.
She had it was like a patella, it was like a knee patella thing or whatever, but. What took longer was like she got after the surgery she had, there was like an infection, yeah. And that was scarier for her. So it's great to see her.
She was the best player. She was the best American attacking player in the world when she got hurt.
Yeah.
And when you look at the year going into the World Cup, the U.S. was underperforming slightly in the way they played, and every win was because of her goals.
Yeah.
And so when you look back at the World Cup, we all said it for 2-3 weeks. The chances were all there. We know all of the players who were there. Rodman, Williams, Rapinoe's history, Alex Morgan. They all are capable of scoring those goals. But Swanson was doing that. I think if she was there, Vlatko might still be the coach, and they would have gone further. Like, a lot would have changed specifically because of her, which is awesome to see her back. But this game felt closer to what the U.S. wants to be, even against an opponent like this. They played on the front foot. They played with energy. They were aggressors. And that's what we're all looking for.
Tanner Davidson scoring goals as well. It was great to see a Gotham player scoring. Just off set pieces. Like, there should be some of these games. Like, we're sort of used to the U.S. Women's National Team not like being on the front foot, but also like kind of dominating set pieces and just getting those moments. And the rest of the world has caught up, not just in footballing tactics or whatever, but just also being dogs in the box. You know what I mean? So
you've got better players who are better athletes, so it's not just Lindsey Horan getting on the end of set pieces. She's always a threat, but since Julie Johnson, no one else has really been one on the team, and now it felt like that was a really good moment here. Also, in the whole like situation of how you have to wrap this is going to be a weird summer. MAAs takes over very late to an Olympics.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the Olympics is going to look like, and also Olympics have been struggles for the U.S. There is less room for error out the gate. It's a smaller tournament. Your groups are tougher. That's kind of been the U.S.'s issue. So to have just a positive start and like get the fans and get the momentum behind Emma Hayes over the course of the next month is going to be huge, to just try and blunt either whatever happens or to get everyone in your camp as you go into the Olympics. And that's kind of why you organize these games in this way. Right. And it was the perfect start.
So it is Pride Month, and there was celebrating that, the U.S. Women's National Team. And then one of the storylines, obviously, was Corbin Albert, who, you know, we talked about her a couple of months ago, all the her Instagram and Twitter likes and some of the videos that she has done that are very anti-LGBT and very just pretty negative, and her teammates were not happy about it. And props to a lot of the other U.S. Women's National Team teammates that also have public platforms and podcasts and stuff. And it's interesting how they're all sort of navigating this, where there's clearly internal discussions, but there is public, I wouldn't say scolding. They're not calling her out by name, but they're just saying like, hey, this is the standard. This is not what we're going to tolerate. I think it's a bold and interesting decision, not only just to call her back into the team when we know that people are upset about it.
Yeah.
I even said this when it initially happened. So, right, Corbin Albert came into the game, got booed by the fans in Colorado. So people know what's going on. They're letting their feelings known. So this is something that's going to probably follow her for a bit until maybe she addresses it or something. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. But, she did wear the Pride colors and the numbers and stuff like that, which is more than former players used to do. There were other players who refused to do that. So the hope is that there's some level of education going on, some sort of understanding where even Lindsey Horan, when she subbed off and Corbin Albert came in, gave her a hug as well. Maybe there is just some progress in a positive direction that isn't sort of upholding what I feel are just horrible and disgusting views. But it's interesting how everybody's sort of navigating it, because they have to address the booze. They have to address, obviously Emma Hayes is going to talk about it. Emma Hayes has been saying like celebrating Pride Month and really talking about it publicly and all these things. So we know it's one of those things where we know, they're saying the right things, but then I wonder, I don't know if the proper, quote unquote, proper punishment is to just not call her in again, because maybe she's that good and then deserves a spot. And maybe she has apologized.
Right.
Maybe she has apologized to her teammates and stuff like that. So, but the just the fact that the team had a good showing, I think is good news. I think the fact that the coach is not necessarily defending the player or saying anything that could sort of reinforce or even sort of apologizing for it. It's like really highlighting like intolerance is not going to be allowed in this space.
Yeah, as you said, it's been interesting watching everyone, because one of the things I think it was on Sam Mewis' spot talking about, but like we're not in the locker room.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know all the dynamics of the people inside of that and the way they interact and the way they see these things. And I think, like you said, it was really comforting to hear immediately after the first press that they did as a U.S. women's team for the previous camp of like, this is unacceptable. This isn't what we're like. But then what is the potential rehabbing behind the scenes and all of those things that we don't know about? I think what's odd with Emma Hayes is you kind of think, okay, it's your first camp. Don't call her in so you can sort of get a lay of the land.
Yeah,
she doesn't personally know, I don't think, Corbin Albert, because it wasn't her job before, hasn't played for her for Chelsea.
Yeah, yeah.
A young player hasn't really been around that long that they must have crossed paths. So I kind of thought she would just not call her in so that she could sort of see where the camp sits.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't choose to do it that way. So it'll be interesting coming out of this one, what are the comments that you hear from players about the way it was handled and what went down? Because I think it's going to set a lot of the tone of like, what is the new culture of this team? Under Jill Ellis, very obvious, but also a lot of that was set by the players. Mm-hmm. A lot of that was set by the Megan Rapinos and Alex Morgans of the world. Those players aren't really there anymore. So you have veterans like Horan, but it's a very young team.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting coming out of this of like, who speaks up? Who sort of decides they're going to set the tone of like the way the team reacts to this and what the players want going forward.
Yeah. I mean, Horan has also dealt with, a lot of news because she had those comments to Meg Linehan of The Athletic about Americans basically don't know shit about soccer. And I was like, all right, well, yeah, you could have chosen a different set of words to make this point. But
she said what she said.
People
listen to us, so there's some truth to that.
There's something about Emma Hayes where I'm like, based on personality, I'm like, Emma Hayes might fight somebody 100%. That says something a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, I don't know. The conversations have been had.
Yeah.
They're paying close attention. What are you liking? What are you retweeting? I'm sure it's gotten that specific. But on top of that, you know that there's been obviously deep conversation. And also props to Emma Hayes. She had commented about Alex Morgan not playing in the game. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but she basically said that she was feeling like a discomfort in her pelvic area. Apparently this is something after women have children, especially athletes, she said, I didn't want to play her because I wanted to play her on Tuesday and I just want to be a little bit careful. But the transparency, the honesty of just like, hey, this is like what she's dealing with. This is what female athletes deal with from time to time. There's a certain level of like, female athletes don't always need to be treated like men. They're not men. They deal with different issues. And I thought that was just like a nice sort of perspective that I've never sort of heard before. And it allowed me to have a different level of empathy, given that sympathy, empathy. I don't go through the same exact thing, but this is something I never thought about. Female athletes that have kids like in this particular way. I have a 1-year old. I don't know exactly what my wife deals with physically in that recovery. I thought this is a good first match for Emma Hayes. I think she handled everything well, and obviously having a good result helps quite a bit.
Yeah, what we talked about with Carlo Ancelotti at the beginning, that's Emma Hayes. Like she's knighted, right?
Is
or
she
whatever
knighted?
She has something that British royalty whatever has. She's been around.
Yeah, OBE, Emma Hayes, Order of the British Empire.
There you
Let's go.
Go. She has full confidence and belief in that what she does works and the way she does it works and who she is. And that's what you want from a leader, right? That you want someone who has already knows that they can forge their path and you can follow it. And I think Jill Ellis got there through her time with the U.S. because of the success with the U.S., but that was different.
Yeah.
And Vlatko, I don't think ever really got there because he had huge success in NWSL, but wasn't at the platform already. And then when he got there, he kind of struggled and he never really got to the point where like his head was above water. I think Emma Hayes coming in, come in off the, like, I have to fucking beat Spain at some point, right? Just a side comment for her, but like, so many managers in the world would be scared to show vulnerability or scared to show that. And she's like, that's the dumbest thing ever. Spain won or Barcelona beat me. I know that. I don't need to hide from that reality, but she's also not scared.
Exactly.
And I think that's really fun to see because I think over the last few years, as the players set the tone and then a lot of those players retired and it's like, we have to listen to Carly Lloyd talk on TV about it and whatever other podcast is going to come out. It's been on the players a lot. And I think now it's going to be on Emma Hayes.
Yeah,
and take a lot of that crap off the plate and let Trinity Rodman play.
Exactly.
Right? Because you know from what you see in NWSL, if you let it be fun and easy and free, these players are going to ball. And I think that's the hope. And I think for that point, the first month or so has been good. She's the Deion Sanders of...
She met Deion Sanders.
Her and Deion were... Deion's like, whoa, Emma Hayes is ready to ball.
Okay, prime Emma, let's go. If it was Sir Vlatko Andonovski, it might have been a different World
Cup. God save the Queen.
So, this is our last show before TST. We are both flying out tomorrow morning to be there.
Because I am the Cooligans now. The Cooligans follows me to North Carolina.
David will be announcing a lot of the matches. So, watch TST. A lot of matches are going to be
ESPN Plus.
ESPN Plus.
YouTube.
YouTube. And I know on the website as well.
Yes.
I think on thetournament.com.
And on ESPN, but I won't be on ESPN.
Okay.
So, you got to go find the good games off.
I leave tomorrow morning, so does he, and the media day tomorrow for TST. Miguelito's flying out tonight. He'll be there, and first game, first two matches are Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday at 1 and 5 p.m. Summer of Soccer. Tune in to my debut, my TST debut, see if I'm going to win this Millie. Okay.
A million here, a million there. If you win $1 million, next time I come in, the water's better be bigger than that. If this is the water I'm getting off $1 million for you.
Yeah, you know what? Stack those on top of each other, dog.
Yeah, that's $1 million water right there.
So tune in. It's going to be crazy. Follow me at Christian_Polanco on Instagram, at Chris Polanco on Twitter, at Soccer Cooligans. We're going to be posting a bunch of content, a lot of interviews, a bunch of really, really cool stuff. Mike will be there as well, helping me out. So it's going to be dope. So tune in. It's going to be a crazy week. We'll see what happens. It's going to be wild. David Goss, thank you again for coming through. I know we had the late scratch of Stefano.
But I was ready to go. I was warmed up. Did my subs. I'm Hasuelo.
Exactly. Perfect. All right. So make sure you follow at Empire Goss on Twitter or Instagram to keep up with the boy. All right. We'll see you on Thursday with a very special TST episode. It's gonna be crazy. So we'll see you then, everybody. Peace.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.